Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
To be joined by our good friend Craig Meyer, who covers Pitt. He was also along with me and lots of others out at the Robert Morris's new arena, the UPMC Center, to watch Robert Morris play Pitt. Craig, I got to just go right off the top. I'm just going to ask you a very, very simple question, and that is, why the hell does it take the opening of a building and an act of God for these two teams to play each other anymore?
I don't know. I mean, I think ideally, and I think a lot of people who you talk to who love basketball in this area agree that the three local D1 schools of Pitt, Duquesne, and Robert Morris, that each of them should play each other every year. You know, when you look at Pitt's schedule, you'll see a school like Canisius or Monmouth, and it's like, oh, well, I mean, you would think, you know, especially this year when they're not playing Duquesne, you wonder why they're not able to kind of slide one of those, you know, like if you're going to play these schools from that level, and I guess what are typically bye games, like why not at least play a local school where there's some interest and, you know, and a lot of fans in the area. I mean, with like Robert Morris, I don't know if part of it's just because, I mean, because they hadn't played, I think the most, I think the most recent year, I want to say it's maybe 2009 before they played tonight. I mean, I don't know if part of that comes from any sort of, you know, any sort of contract talks for the game, where I don't know if Pitt feels that, hey, because Robert Morris is so close, we don't necessarily have to pay you what we normally would for one of these bye game opponents. I don't know if it's that, but I mean, it would seem to make sense that these schools would play every year. I mean, I think it came with a new building opening tonight, so that adds something to it. But I think tonight showed that, you know, having these games at least semi-regularly is a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing about it, Craig, is at some point, you know, why won't the adults in the room, i.e. the administrators, get involved and basically say, okay, let's all sit down and let's figure out how to make this work, and then basically it's up to us to go back and sort of impose it on our coaches. I don't understand why, if you're, you know, an administrator, you wouldn't want these games to happen. And, you know, I actually wrote a column about it, just so you know, just so you don't think I stepped on it. In case I didn't say, I didn't want to step on your toes for tomorrow. But I wrote a column about this very thing. And one of the things I said is, you know, it's been hinted at by Jamie Dixon and by other people, you know, that, oh, well, these are games that, you know, that Pitt could actually lose because they're getting the best shot from these teams because these teams want to knock them off and all this other stuff, right? Here's the thing. If Pitt's looking for wins, given their record against Duquesne and Robert Morris over the last 40 years or whatever, yeah, why wouldn't they want to play these two? They're 31-0 against Robert Morris. They're 36-4 in their last 40 against Duquesne. If my math is correct, that's 67-4 in their last 71 games against these two teams. Why wouldn't they want to play them?
Yeah, I mean, I think that would make sense. You know, you were talking about, too, about administrators, I guess, having to be the adults in the room and kind of force, you know, and if there's no other option, potentially force coaches into these kind of deals. I mean, I think at least based on his answers and the brevity of them yesterday, it seems like that was the case with Jeff Capel in this game. Like, I didn't get the impression from him when he was asked like, why they agreed to play this game. And he said, we were asked to, basically. Like, that doesn't strike me as a guy who, without maybe a little bit of arm twisting, would have been fully in on Pitt going to Robert Morris to play, though. You know, especially with a team that, as he's talked about, you know, and as was shown against Nicholls State, like, they can't just walk in and expect to beat someone. Like, there's not good enough for that. So, yeah, I mean, I think, I guess with, I would guess if these games would be become somewhat regular, I mean, I would think that there would have to be some kind of point with coaches, you know, and the ADs trying to kind of work something out.
Yeah. Now, what were your overall impressions of the new building? I thought it was perfect for a place like Robert Morris.
Yeah, it was gorgeous. That's a place like the Sewell Center. I mean, for, you know, compared to other NEC venues, wasn't all that bad. But I mean, I also think it was somewhere that, like, there are a handful of Whipple gyms that are nicer than it was. So, I mean, this, yeah, I will not claim to be an expert on, you know, on, like, on arenas throughout low major college basketball conferences. Like, I would have to think what Robert Morris have is relatively unmatched at that level. I mean, it's a beautiful place. I'm sure for any tool in that program, it'll be one heck of a recruiting tool. It'll be something that could stabilize that program and get it back to, you know, winning 20 plus games a year and making NCAA tournaments. I'll be intrigued to see how they fill it. I mean, I covered Robert Morris this several years ago, but I mean, they even had trouble filling up the Sewell Center even like 60% of the way. And that was a venue that's about half the size. So, I mean, I think with it being new, there's some pull and there's some attraction with it, but, you know, going forward, I will be intrigued to see how they, you know, how full that venue typically gets.
No, absolutely. And I think the big thing is, Craig, you know, the way that it is, the acoustics in it and everything else, I think it can still be a pretty exciting place, even with only 2,000 people in it, which, you know, I don't know that you could have said that of the old building.
No. You know, this one's more, I think it's far more compact. The Sewell Center, because it housed so much different stuff, I mean, it had a track around it. It was kind of a cavernous place. With the lower ceiling there, I definitely think that if it's a, even if it's only half full, it would still at least feel fairly loud.
With respect to Pitt tonight, I thought, well, obviously we saw some really, really good things from Trey McGowan's and obviously Xavier Johnson. I mean, those are the two guys that are going to get it done, right? I mean, it's going to be very similar to the last year. Maybe the supporting cast is a little bit better, but it's probably not all that much different, is it?
Yeah. I mean, I think Ryan Murphy's effectively in, you know, kind of a different version of that Jared Wilson frame role from the last season, where he's their best and most consistent three-point shooter. I mean, I think he does some things better than the Wilson frame, and I guess he's about 3 or 4 inches shorter than he was. So he's a different player. But, yeah, I mean, McGowan's and Johnson are definitely going to have to be better than they were in the first two games. Johnson still looks a little bit off, still a little careless. His shot, which is a big thing that anytime you would read any NBA draft profiles of him, that was a big thing that scouts and talent evaluators would really harp on. It doesn't look like it's gotten much better, but again, we're only three games in, and McGowan's, yeah, tonight was...
Do you want to transfer the
ball? Yeah, no, you know, like, tonight was basically, was basically what his game is ideally kind of built around, where he's able to routinely get by his defender, gets the basket where he finishes off, rather, you know, where he does that, or he draws contact and makes free throws. I still think he's a guy who can get a little bit, maybe a little bit too, I think he can have a little bit too narrow of a focus on those drives, where he basically charges forward and there really isn't any alternative to it, which I think gets him in trouble sometimes, forces turnovers and bad shots. But, at the very least for tonight, I mean, it was sort of like his games last year when he went for 30-plus against Florida State and Louisville. Like, he looked like he was just a different kind of athlete, a different kind of, a player with a different level of speed out there tonight.
We're talking with Craig Meyer of the Post-Gazette. Craig covers Pitt for the Post-Gazette. You can find his stuff at postgazette.com. Craig, you know, we've seen them now. Let's see. We saw them shock the world, so to speak, and beat Florida State the other night. Then we saw them again shock the world on Saturday and lose to Nicholls State. Tonight we kind of saw what we thought. What do you make of this team, this Pitt team?
I still honestly don't know. I mean, I think it's in some ways they're kind of like last year's team, which beat Florida State and Louisville and lost to Niagara and also lost to some pretty bad ACC teams like Wake Forest and Boston College. I mean, I think the fact that they remind me a little bit of what they were last year, given the guys they had coming back and the improvement you would expect from them, it's not a great sign. But yeah, it's only three games in, but it's, I'm curious to see how that works because they've talked a lot about the lessons of losing to a team like a Nicholls State, where you have to stay focused and not take anything for granted. They got that last year with the Niagara game, but that was kind of near the end of non-conference play. So getting that kind of a loss that early this season, I'll be intrigued to see what kind of an impact that has in the coming weeks, in the coming months here.
Do you agree with me, Craig, that the bottom of the ACC, probably the bottom half, provides more opportunities for Pitt to get wins this year than last? In other words, I don't think that this is a conference that's nearly as deep as it has been.
I'd say that's true, yeah, because, I mean, it's got a very clearly, I think, defined top four. Then there's sort of a middle, which is a little nebulous, but otherwise, yeah, like the bottom of the conference, Wake Forest looks terrible. Virginia Tech has looked pretty good so far, but that's a largely rebuilt roster. Clemson lost to that Virginia Tech team, so I think things are a little iffy there. Georgia Tech, I don't know with them just because they beat NC State, but this is also a team that has a postseason ban, and I feel like teams that have that kind of a ceiling on what they can do where they don't have a postseason to play for, they can kind of fizzle out, especially if things start to go bad. Boston College has been better than I thought, but I still don't necessarily think they're very good. So, yeah, I mean, I think there is an opportunity. I mean, they only had three conference wins last year, but I think it was also a little bit deeper and better of a conference. And honestly, I think it even applies across college basketball as a whole. I mean, we saw, tonight the number one team in the country lost to Evansville. So, I mean, I think I think that maybe one thing that's really helpful for Pitt as far as improving their win total is the league they're dealing with and the kind of tier of the conference that they're in isn't especially strong.
No, it isn't. And, of course, it's always fun. Did you happen to watch any of that Syracuse debacle where they scored like 30 points against Virginia?
Oh, against Virginia, no. I try not to watch too much Syracuse basketball when I don't have to. Yeah, I mean, I feel like they're the same team every year now, like in the past 5 years. And, they'll go 22-14 and sneak in the tournament and then somehow make the Sweet 16.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't even know if that's, they pull that off a lot, but I don't even know this year if that's going to be possible because I don't think that team is very good at all. Craig, last one I have for you. We saw Terrell Brown, however you say his name, looks like he's becoming a reasonably functional center for them. Their front court, what do you make of who they have, and do you feel like it's good enough and can improve enough that it will be a factor in the ACC?
I think Terrell Brown's a big factor in kind of answering that. I think it's a pretty thin group where I think – where you basically have three players where you have Terrell Brown, you have Eric Hamilton, the graduate transfer from UNC Wilmington, and you have Abdul Karim Kulbali, who's a freshman who's only played, I want to say so far, about 3 minutes this season. So I think that he's somewhere at this point in his development they're not going to be leaning on much. Hamilton's been pretty good. I mean, I feel like Cable's played Brown a little bit more than we thought he would just because Brown's been playing so well, and that's a guy who can be kind of hit or miss as a player. Like, he when he has some sense of momentum and confidence, the guy looks phenomenal. And in the first three games he's been blocking shots a bunch. It seems like he's a more assertive offensive player. He seems a little stronger. He's able to come down with rebounds a little bit better. I feel like guys can't poke the ball away from him quite as easily. But I will be intrigued though, because he had some games during the non-conference schedule last season where You know, they played Colgate, he had 9 blocks. Actually, that might have been his freshman season, but, you know, I feel like there's some times where that guy, just being 6'10 and with a 7'4 wingspan, can kind of impose his will against weaker opponents. But the fact that he did it against Florida State, though, I think is a sign that, you know, maybe this guy has turned a corner, because we're up to 2 coaching staffs now that have seen the potential in him and been excited by it. But there's always the, like, caveat that, hey, we just can't get him to do it consistently. And if he just played with a little bit more of a motor, he could really be something. So maybe for Pitt, I mean, these first 3 games, like, it's been an encouraging sign, because if they get consistent production from him, like, I think that makes them a different and certainly much more dangerous team.
Craig, great stuff as always. Thank you so much. And, well, now your work is complete, so get some rest.
Thank you, Paul.
All right, buddy. Craig Meyer, the Post-Gazette on Paul's Ice, 93.7 The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.